This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Hurricane season begins officially tomorrow, but Mother Nature, she doesn't, you know, really have a calendar. She does what she wants to do when she wants to do. And we never know from year to year what kind of hurricane season we're going to get. Last year, of course, it was a doozy. We had Hurricane Harvey, delivered $125 billion worth of damage to Texas, and many, many lives were lost. San Antonio dodged a bullet when Harvey didn't exactly come here as was forecasted, but it certainly delivered enough rain across the state, and we saw things like many of the evacuees coming to San Antonio. So how are we preparing as a community with our emergency preparedness forces, and also individually, what do we need to be thinking about as hurricane season becomes a reality once again here with the lessons learned from last year? We're going to be talking about that this hour. Give us a call if you got a question or a comment. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. What kind of questions do you have about the hurricane season, what we need to prepare for it, and what your experiences you had last year? We're joined now by John Nielsen Gammon. He is the Texas State Climatologist and a Regents Professor of Atmospheric Sciences at Texas A&M University. Chief Patrick Zepeda, he's a coordinator for the City of San Antonio's Office of Emergency Management. And Mark Hanna, he is the Public Relations Manager for the Insurance Council of Texas. And Mark Hanna, welcome to The Source. It's great to have you here. So what are you keeping an eye on? Because insurance, you guys, you really have to add things up and figure out where we are with the damages.
Generally, at this point in time, even though it's the official start of the hurricane season, we're still kind of looking at what's coming toward us in the way of cold fronts and dry lines and things like that that are setting off thunderstorms. It wasn't that long ago that San Antonio was rocked by the costliest hail storm in Texas history back on April 12th of 2016, and we're still getting severe hailstorms. They're just not hitting populated areas.
We had a big one, what, yesterday near San Angelo?
Yes, and Lubbock as well, with baseball-sized hail, and Central Texas, and tornadoes, still getting them. Not to take away from the hurricane season and what you're talking about today, but again, we're still, have severe thunderstorms. We're still in the middle of that season, and that's, from an insurance perspective, that's what we're eyeing right now.
So John Nielsen Gammon, state climatologist, and you're a scientist and a researcher, and you look at the data. So we just heard, that the insurance guys are looking at the dollars and the damage reports, but tell me what you're seeing.
Well, I see that my roof needs a replacement because of the hailstorm we had back in March, for that matter. The hurricanes are we had a really ridiculous hurricane season last year. Three hurricanes produced multi-billion dollar disasters, and it had actually been a break of several years since we had had a major hurricane make landfall in the United States. So, these things are erratic. We get stretches where they happen to miss us, and we get stretches where we get nailed by several. I think people still remember 2008 and 2005 as with Ike, Katrina, and Rita being major hurricanes that had big impacts. In terms of long-term trends, it's really difficult to piece that out because there's so much variation from year to year. We've got various indications about what's going to be happening this year, and we've got other evidence that points to possible changes in the future.
Hurricanes are fueled by the warm Gulf waters. Are they getting warmer?
They are. Last year with Hurricane Harvey, we were seeing record warm temperatures in the Gulf of Mexico. When we hear about global temperatures going up, you have to remember 70% of the globe is covered with water. So mostly that's ocean temperatures that are rising, and that's the signal that we see. Generally, the Gulf of Mexico doesn't really do much different from what the globe is doing, so temperatures are going to be warmer and keep getting warmer as we go forward, and that is going to lead to the potential of more intense hurricanes.
with the concept of scientific certainty being kept in check here, which I know is something that you pay attention to. You know, you're a scientist, and you have to recognize that. But as we translate scientific data into information for popular consumption, you know, we can say pretty much with certainty that there is global climate warming.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no question that average global temperatures have risen over the past century. So that's one thing that's for certain. Another thing that's for certain is that carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases have increased, and that change is predominantly due to man's influence. It starts getting a little bit fuzzier when we talk about how different factors come into play, and then in particular when we go into impacts on particular weather systems. With hurricanes, scientists still don't know why we have, say, 50 to 100 tropical cyclones globally every year, why that number isn't something like 20 or 200. And without a solid scientific theory, it's difficult to really be confident that what computer models predict is actually the right answer.
So,
but some aspects, such as maximum intensity, we do have a theory for, and that predicts increased intensity as temperatures get warmer, and models are showing that sort of thing also. So that's one aspect of future hurricanes that there's more confidence in.
So hurricanes are one side of the coin for when we talk about what's happening with global warming, but also we're entering into the drought season as well. And are you keeping an eye on that?
Yeah, unfortunately, drought seems to be expanding across Texas right now, and the forecast for the next few weeks as far as the weather goes looks like it's going to be very dry. So we may well see a drought coming in as an emerging issue as, of course, we get to the time of year when temperatures are high, evaporation is high, and water use is high as well. And one of the paradoxes of climate change is that it increases the intensity and frequency of both droughts and floods because rainfall tends to come in more concentrated periods and temperatures lead to more rapid drying. And so we simultaneously have greater vulnerability to drought in Texas as well as greater risk of extreme rainfall from hurricanes and other types of storms.
And in cities like San Antonio, we're seeing more triple-digit days. Is that correct?
That's right. Because, you know, with normal temperatures in the mid-90s in the summer, it doesn't take very many degrees of warming to suddenly see all those days transition into triple-digit days. What we saw in 2011 is probably going to be normal by the middle of the 21st century.
Okay, we're going to continue talking about climate change with our state climatologist, John Nielsen Gammon, also talking about emergency preparedness for extreme weather here in San Antonio. That includes hurricanes as well as extreme hot days and what this means for insurance and preparation and how you should be preparing for all of these things that are happening around us. It's going to impact you. It's going to impact our economy. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We've already seen some interesting weather this hurricane season. Subtropical storm Alberto dumped too much rain over the southeast over Memorial Day weekend. We may have seen some of the disturbing video of extreme flooding that we saw. And is that going to happen here as we enter hurricane season? We don't know. There's no way of telling. All we can do is prepare. We're talking about preparing for hurricane season. The number to call in if you've got a question or a comment, 210-614-8980. Let me bring in Chief Patrick Zepeda into our conversation. He's the coordinator of the City of San Antonio's Office of Emergency Management. And Chief, it's great to have you here. How have y'all been getting ready all for the hurricane season?
Well, all roads lead to San Antonio for hurricane preparation for most of the state. And the reason that is we're far enough away from the coastline that we don't get those storm surges, those tropical force winds. So we've been since way back Katrina, Rita, We've been participating in receiving evacuees, 40,000 to 50,000 back in Katrina and Rita. So we got our team together the first week of May. It was May 9th. And we get together with our partners with the Texas Department of Emergency Management, with all of our other partners that support shelters like public health, dishes, and we identify our shelters already, where they'll be for this year. We have them inspected, get together with all of our partners that would support shelters. The state has a state-funded warehouse here and a state-funded responder shelter as well. And so we get all that ready and find out where our resources at and hold an exercise every year. So we held our exercise already this May, and we're prepared to respond to help anyone that needs assistance for hurricane season.
So the top of the agenda for San Antonio's emergency preparedness with emergency management is be ready to accept evacuees.
Correct. It's different. It really depends on what the storm is. Remind you, for Hurricane Harvey, with such a large storm that was, it caused rivers to crest downstream where we couldn't get evacuees here. And while
so like the Guadalupe flooded out around Victoria.
Right, and we had a flood on I-10, Columbus. So our mission was a little different this year. We didn't receive as many evacuees, but we set up a responder shelter. And so when the storm was still hitting areas, we were amassing our forces to respond to help the state of Texas. So we opened up what might be called a logistics support area, a first responder shelter. We had 7,000 first responders here in San Antonio. We had three of those mobile medical units, their hospitals, with all the staffing. We had 347 ambulances on the strike team. And so it was a large deal, two fuel depots there at Joe Freeman. So we amassed all those resources. I think there was 168 18-wheelers with commodities that we had brought in. So once the storm was to a point where we could get those resources to the areas they needed to be, then we put them in play.
Also, San Antonio CPS Energy is important going out and helping restore power. They play a role in that.
Correct. They just had their conference here in San Antonio, so I was actually a guest speaker there for their mutual aid conference. So I think they sent out, for Hurricane Harvey, 60,000 power people to get power restored to different places. And that's a large deal. I looked that up so I could have that little caveat in my speech, but I was impressed how many people are involved in restoring power grid, 60,000 power workers, so from 250 different power companies. So that's a large deal.
It's incredible. Let me go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980, talking about hurricane preparedness, lessons learned from last year, and how do we make sure that we pay attention to those lessons this year. Barbara is on the line. Barbara, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. And what I'd like to ask is, what is the Emergency Preparation Service, or whatever we call it, doing about us here in San Antonio? I live a block from the San Antonio River, and we've had, and the rain events we've had, it's been bad enough. If we get hurricane weather, which is possible, we've gotten it before, what is being planned for residents here?
Okay, Barbara, thank you for the call. So, Chief Patrick Cepeda?
So here, the same thing we're doing for everyone else in preparation. We have got some rain before. We don't get typically those type winds here. We're too far from the coastline. We don't get a storm surge, but we'll get what is our number one hazard, which is flooding. We could get. And so we have a list of shelters, and we assist everyone else. At the same time, the flip side of that coin is the Texas Department of Emergency Management, we have shelters everywhere. If we were in an affected area and we couldn't have our shelters here, we have other partners in other cities that we've always supported. If that storm was to come this way, we would open up additional shelters outside of that area. But so we do a lot of planning for opening those shelters as well here.
Yeah, Barbara, let me ask you a question. Do you have, since you live so close to the river, do you have flood insurance?
I live until we get the new plans from the River Authority, so far I don't live in the 100, but I live in the 500, as is everybody in my neighborhood. And so I've bought that insurance, but we've increased from 11 to 35 structures in my neighborhood in the floodplain, in the 100-year floodplain. And so I'm concerned that, and I have never had, I'd like to know, I think we would like to know, is where's the shelter? How do we get there? You know, I remember years ago we signed up for the notice from the emergency services, but do we need to re-sign up as a neighborhood? I just don't know.
Okay, Barbara, hang on. So good questions. So should people like Barbara have some awareness of, like, where would I go if I had to? Like, I want to know where my shelter is now, even, you know, months before this thing happens.
Well, we don't advertise a shelter ahead of time. There's a lot of reasons for that. And when you advertise a shelter, you have people coming from out of town, people on buses, coach buses, cars.
We don't know what kind of disaster we're dealing with at the time.
Where it's going to be, what kind of disaster, if that shelter is even in a good place. The shelter you advertise could be in the affected area. So until the emergency comes, we don't identify our shelter. And it's to the point where we do is we set up a reception area. We advertise the reception area. It'll be in all the TxDOT signs. It'll be pushed out in emergency notifications. You come through reception, and then we tell you which shelter to go to. And so it's very fluid in that one could fill up very fast. And we advertised it, there would be more people than it could occupy it. So we actually have everyone, whether in town, out of town, come through a reception area. There are two things recommended from the San Antonio Office of Emergency Management. There are tools that you can easily benefit from. We recommend that you, if you have a smartphone, you can download the Ready South Texas app. It features instant access to evacuation maps, safe routes, details on emergency shelters and special services. This app also sends out alerts and emergency notifications as well. It can help you broadcast your status to all your emergency contacts on your phone by one tap. It's an all-hazard type of app. It's not just flooding or hurricanes. We also recommend you go to alertsa.com. That's notifications. So We recommend you have multiple ways to get emergency notifications. This notification can be sent to your phone, home phone, email address. It allows you to build a profile to share information with the Office of Emergency Management, with where you live, and if you have any functional needs or a disability that you want to share that you could require special assistance in the event of emergency.
So, okay, so is the 311 app also part of that? Is this the city's app?
So the 311 isn't an app. It gives us a good picture of what's happening in the city, and 311 helps the city receive services, but also gives us a picture at the EOC of what's happening outside.
Okay, what is the name of the app that you were recommending just now?
It's Ready South Texas. It's an app for your smartphone. And remind you, we had 60,000 people downloading that simultaneously during Hurricane Harvey. I'm advocating today that, you know, the preparation for your hurricane season, which will be flooding here, to prepare ahead of time, you know, and to get your supply kit. And on that app, it gives you lists that you could use to build your supply kit, to get your medicines, your over-the-counter medicines, your prescriptions, your 3 days' worth of food, cash, and develop a plan of communication with your family and your friends before that emergency. And like I talked about, ways to receive your emergency notifications, at least three sources.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me go to another caller. This is Tanya. Tanya, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. One of the questions that I had was in regard to the shelters. Are they already stockpiled with, I'm going to use like diapers and formula, food, you know, things that are difficult to get to in an emergency when we're not prepared? And do we have any community resources that we as community members can contribute to stockpile the shelters on the preemptive side?
Okay, Tanya, thank you for the call. So, Chief?
We don't stock the shelters ahead of time because one thing we were talking about a few minutes ago is we don't know which shelter.
But you have a warehouse.
We have a warehouse. And so a lot of those perishables aren't in there. We like to really organize our donations, and they were very organized through the food bank assisted us as well with the Department of Human Services to organize those donations. Because if you saw during Harvey, some of the donation sites that were not organized, not here in San Antonio, but they became to where there was so much donations, they weren't organized. They were in a pile, like maybe as high as 2-3 stories, and it was all the mixed stuff together. But we'll we have the food bank to assist us in receiving those donations. We'll actually put out a message when we're ready to receive those and what we would want to receive. But we do have a warehouse with a lot of the necessities already here.
So, Mark Hanna with the Insurance Council of Texas, we heard from Barbara on the line earlier talking about her house being just a few blocks from the San Antonio River, and she was talking about the 100-year floodplain and the 500-year floodplain. How are they supposed to make sense of that?
Well, if you're in a floodplain and the bank, you're still paying off your house, the bank's going to require that you have flood insurance. But in the event that you've paid off your house, that shouldn't tell people, okay, hey, well, I don't have to buy flood insurance anymore. If you live near a dry stream, a creek, a river, a lake, what have you, anywhere near one, you should have flood insurance. She's very wise to have flood insurance. She also talked about added construction in the area, which could just exacerbate the problem. What we're seeing from hurricanes, and we've seen them from tropical storms, that they'll move inland. We don't know exactly where they're going to go, but they'll stall and stop and just dump huge amounts of rainfall. And that's what's going to get everyone at some point in time. You know, we've seen these 20 and 25-inch rainfalls in Marble Falls and Laredo from just stalled storms, and that can happen in San Antonio or anywhere else. And what we saw from Hurricane Harvey with 60 inches of rainfall, the highest recorded ever in the United States, it can happen just about anywhere. And in Houston, they've seen now 3 floods in the past 3 years. And these are homes that, you know, may not have flooded ever. And so these floods just seem to be getting worse and worse. And a lot of times, just because you live outside a floodplain and you don't have to buy flood insurance, don't look at it that way, because probably 30-40% of the homes flooded by Hurricane Harvey were outside floodplains.
Okay, we're talking about hurricane season, lessons learned from last year, trying to assess your risk, what you should do to prepare. Some things are as easy as downloading an app and having that on your smartphone, having plans in place, talking to maybe some of your relatives and seeing if there's going to be room on their floor for you to bunk during times of need. And we don't know where the next disaster is going to hit and when it's going to be, but we have to start thinking about it now in order to be smart and safe. Give us a call if you got a question or a comment, a suggestion, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Well, last year when we had Hurricane Harvey come through, probably the thing that most people noticed was the long lines at the gas stations. That was the fake gas shortage that we had that was caused by panic and confusion. What can we do to avoid that in the future? That certainly was something that caused a great inconvenience to many, many people that was unnecessary. Is that a lesson learned from the last hurricane season? And what solutions do we have today to try to deal with that? And also, what kind of hurricane season can we actually expect? Let me ask that to John Nielsen Gammon. If you want to call in, the number is 210-614-8980 to hear whatever it is that you want to talk about with this hurricane stuff, because it's pretty important. John Nielsen Gammon, Texas State climatologist. What is the prediction for the hurricane season?
Well, the outlooks from the National Weather Service and most other people that do predictions say it's going to be most likely to be near normal to maybe slightly above normal in terms of the number of hurricanes and number of major hurricanes and that sort of thing. We've got a potential developing El Nino in the Pacific Ocean, which means more wind shear that can rip storms apart over the Atlantic, so that sort of inhibits things. Also, the ocean temperatures in the Pacific are near normal, which by now counts as cold because temperatures are generally warming. But counterbalancing that is the fact that we've basically been in a pattern of active hurricane years in the Atlantic for the past couple decades that may still be going on.
So the wind shear in the Atlantic keeps the hurricanes from becoming organized and developing the eye, is that it?
That's right. You've got two factors going on. First, the storm is organized as a vertical column of circulation, and so it has to fight against any factors like winds that are trying to rip it apart. Secondly, for a hurricane to really get going, it needs to have a lot of moisture in the air. And when winds are blowing in different directions and different levels, that can bring in dry air and prevent the hurricane from really getting going.
I've heard some people say that the words that we use, like climate change, that's not the best term, that we should be using climate variation, because we're getting chickens today and feathers tomorrow when it comes to things like rain. We get so much, and it's going to be so plentiful, and then it's going to go away. Things are more extreme and more volatile.
Well, yeah, it sort of depends on what aspect of climate you're talking about. With hurricanes, as I've mentioned, you get large variations from year to year, and we can't really detect a solid trend, even though we suspect that such a trend is going on. There's so much variation that it will take several decades before it becomes really clear that maximum intensity has changed, and of course by then it will have changed by a lot. Other factors like temperature, the natural variability is relatively small compared to the long-term trend, so it's clear that the trend is present, and it's dominating even our weather predictions. So when you see a seasonal temperature forecast, generally the forecast is for above normal temperatures, and that's primarily because temperatures are warmer now in general than they were 30 years ago.
So when you say that the forecast is for normal or just above normal, well, I don't understand what normal is anymore.
Yeah, for hurricanes, something like 8 to 10 named storms, maybe a handful of major hurricanes. But, you know, personal experience varies quite a bit. People like to know about the seasonal forecast for hurricanes, but in terms of whether a hurricane is actually going to strike a particular location in a particular year, there's really no way to say, and it really doesn't matter what the outlook is. There's always, in any given year, there's a risk of getting a direct hit from a major hurricane, so people's preparations for hurricanes really shouldn't hinge on the seasonal forecast. Forecast is a good way of getting people's attention to remind them that hurricanes are going to happen, but they're going to happen every year.
Right, only takes one if it's a direct hit to Houston or Corpus Christi or some other metropolitan area to really be a disaster.
That's right, and conversely, there were many hurricanes a century ago that we never knew about because they just stayed over water. So it'd be nice if we had a better handle on being able to forecast hurricane activity in different parts of the Atlantic, but we can't really do that at this point. We can't pin down things as far as different times of year other than what happens normally. So, the trouble is hurricanes are small things, and they grow based on from individual weather patterns, individual tropical waves, and it's almost like trying to forecast where an individual tornado is going to take place. You can tell when the situation is favorable for severe weather, but where and when things actually happen is up to the atmosphere.
Got a question or comment as we talk about hurricane season and climate change. Numbers 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. So, Mark Hanna, with the Insurance Council of Texas, What are some things that people need to be doing now to prepare? I always hear about doing a home inventory, but what exactly does that mean?
Well, that's probably the most important thing that you could do is when it comes to insurance, because if you have a catastrophic event and say your house is gone, it's blown away, it's flooded away, it's whatever has taken place, well, if you've got insurance, the insurance adjuster comes along and looks at the house and sees that it's gone, and they write you a check for the basically the dwelling portion of the house. But to settle the claim, the last thing that they will ask is, okay, what did you have inside? What was your personal property? What were your contents? And you have to tell us so that we can compensate you for the loss. And after a catastrophic event, whether it's a hurricane, a tornado, a fire, or what have you, people are traumatized, and they can tell you, oh, yeah, I can tell you everything that we have. But after these events, their mind goes blank, and they're not, you know, where they would like to be. So thus, we suggest, highly suggest and recommend, you know, to go through your house. Everybody has a cell phone. It's a camera. You can do a running narration, or you can take photos or what have you. But look at every room at your house and taking pictures of the things on the walls and all of your appliances. I mean, it all adds up, but at the same time, you're going to need this information to settle the claim. And Lord forbid, that's the last thing that you want is any type of catastrophic event. But if you can go do that, again, every room, every closet, your jewelry, just everything. And then once you've got all that, put it on a thumb drive, or send it up in the clouds, but send it away from your house. Send it to work just away from the house so that it's in a safekeeping area. And then in the event that you really need it, an adjuster comes by, you can go, this is what we lost. And if you've got $100,000 or $200,000 on your personal property, you can get that money back.
How detailed do you have to be in that inventory? Because I just say I have a refrigerator, that can mean anything from a $400 jobby to a really expensive, top-of-the-line, $2,000 or $3,000 refrigerator.
Well, just try to do the basics. I mean, if you know when you bought it, if you know where you bought it, you know, that's great, and be able to tell, you know, what kind it is. If you're looking at a TV or any type of big screen TV, again, saying, hey, okay, we bought this such and such. If you know the price tag of what it was, where it was, that's great. Okay, do the best that you can. It's going to be so, so much better than if you have nothing at all.
I feel like I don't live in a floodplain. I think I don't. But I went ahead and I bought federal flood insurance anyway because of the this experiences from last year and having gone to so many disaster. I've gone to so many disaster areas. It's like I would hate to have to go through this myself. And but when I bought the federal flood insurance, they wanted all of the payment up front. It couldn't be monthly. It had to be one payment right now in order for it to take effect. That seems like a artificial barrier that's in place that could be remedied.
It could, but the National Flood Insurance Program, which is administered by FEMA, has its own problems and issues after Katrina, and then after Rita, and after Superstorm Sandy. The program's $25 billion in debt. Now that we've had Irma and Ike and Harvey on top of that, we have no idea how deep the program is in debt. That may be one of the reasons why they asked for it up front. I don't know. But flood insurance, from an insurance product perspective, is one of the least expensive insurance products that you can buy for the coverage that you can get, which is you can buy up to $250,000 for the dwelling portion of your home and up to $100,000 portion of the contents of inside your house. So it is limited. And then at the same time, you can't just be looking at a storm out there, whether it's a hurricane or what have you, and go, hey, that looks like it's going to cause a lot of rain and possibly flood, so we'll buy this policy today. Well, if you buy it, it takes 30 days to take effect. And again, to answer your question, yeah, you're right. You know, on average, I think living outside a floodplain, the policies normally run around $400. And a lot of people look at that amount and go, well, let's take our chances this year. And let's say it's not going to flood. But again, that's what insurance is all about, so that in the middle of the night when the rains continue to fall and fall and fall, you can know that you've got coverage.
Yeah, you're trying to minimize your risk, and that's what we're talking about today, your risk. How vulnerable are you to a natural disaster here in San Antonio or the other folks around the state as we go into hurricane season? When we come back from the break, we'll talk about some of the emergency items that you might want to be keeping in your home right now. There's all sorts of things that have been invented that are really pretty cool that you'd want to have around just in case. If you've got a question or comment to suggest, how are you preparing for the hurricane season? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, and The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. $125 billion in damage. That's what we got last year when Hurricane Harvey landed at the Texas coast. It hit the coastal areas around Rockport and Fulton, but it also delivered so much water in Houston that area flooded in tremendously. It almost came all the way to San Antonio. Not quite, but had it, it would have been caused millions, maybe another $1 billion worth of damages here. What questions do you have? How are we preparing? What lessons did you learn from Hurricane Harvey? The number to call in is 210-614-8980 because hurricane season officially begins tomorrow. So Chief Patrick Zepeda, he is the coordinator for the City of San Antonio's Office of Emergency Management. What do you think people should just have around ready to go, a go bag for a disaster?
Well, it's definitely, as we said earlier, you prepare for a storm before the storm, don't wait till the storm. And we talked about downloading an app, Ready South Texas, and also the alertsa.com to get your notifications. Do these things before the storm, because we had a high demand during Hurricane Harvey, 60,000 downloads all of a sudden for one app. But build your emergency kit, your go bag before, and put the stuff in it like you need your water, you need your non-perishable foods, enough for at least 3 days. You need your prescription medicines, you need your over-the-counter medicines, you need cash. Something that we were talking about during a break was other things like you start thinking about your external battery, you know, for your smartphone. You might not have a place to plug in. But to have that external battery, to have your batteries, to have your flashlight.
Well, now they have these very powerful external batteries that can be used to jumpstart a car. And those are really impressive, and I'm glad I bought one recently. But it also can serve as something that can, like hours and hours and hours worth of power for things like phones and other items. So that's something that people could invest in.
Correct. And I would definitely invest in those items and work on your list and that app helps you prepare a list for different types of emergencies. And it's really on large storms like Harvey, first responders are all out, but realize how many calls are backed up. A person that becomes a first responder is just about anybody, your next door neighbor. So you need to start that community that often you know your neighbors before the storm, before the disaster, find out if you're in a floodplain like we talked about, have your communication plan for your family, places you're going to meet if this happens ahead of time. So it's really important to have a family plan. Yeah.
One thing I heard from listening to people who had to evacuate during Hurricane Harvey is that the thing that they really wanted and they needed were Ziploc bags, that when they were having to evacuate and things that they needed to keep dry, they had trouble keeping dry. And so having items like that in Ziploc bags ready to go so that it would help you in that evacuation.
Correct. Ziploc bags are great if you really want to get into it. There's those they make those watertight boxes, actually, also. And a lot of them are transparent, but people take them fishing. So in case they fall in the water. But
oh, yeah.
They're sealed tight. Your smartphone could go in there, your perishables that could get damaged from the water. Very important documents.
Another thing that complicates things to a point when we have evacuations are people's concerns for their animals. And so you have learned that some people won't leave their animals.
Correct. And so when we say San Antonio is a hub and we set up these shelters for all the people that are coming, in addition, we set up shelters for pets. During Hurricane Harvey, we received 250 pets at our pet shelter. So that's, we also address pets as well.
Mark Hammond, people at, when you're with the Insurance Council of Texas, they really don't understand frequently how to function. I saw a lot of complaints about FEMA and other insurance after Hurricane Harvey hit. Are their expectations too high, or were these services just not functioning at the level that they should have been functioning at?
Well, there was some confusion out there on what people should do. I think a lot of it had to do with people not having flood insurance and hoping that they could rely on their homeowner insurance policy, which provides no protection for flooding. And so there was some confusion of turning to your agent and seeing, well, maybe, you know, the homeowner policy could work, you know. But 90% of the claims that came to the insurance industry were flood claims, and so they had to be redirected, so to speak, from the insurance adjuster, the agent, what have you, toward the National Flood Insurance Program.
So there's wind damage and then there's flood damage. Those are two different things.
That's correct. Your homeowner policy is basically, your basic homeowner policy is your fire policy, and it normally, unless you're living along the Texas coast, you have a windstorm policy that comes along with it. And that's going to provide you coverage from any type of tornadoes. It's going to provide you coverage from hail, any type of wind coverage. And then a separate flood insurance policy that you can buy, again, from your agent. Any agent can sell it. But again, it comes by way of the federal government. People living along the Texas coast basically need to get three different policies. And one is the basic homeowner or fire policy. The windstorm policy could be a separate policy and not come from their State Farm, Allstate, Farmers, what have you. It may have to come from the wind pool along the Texas coast, which is a whole other story, the Texas Windstorm Insurance Association. And then thirdly, a third policy being the flood insurance policy.
John Nielsen Gammon, Texas State Climatologist. You mentioned that there is a trend that 50 years ago, it wasn't, or 100 years ago, conditions back then aren't as severe as they are now. Where is this trend going?
Well, for many types of severe weather, the trend is upward. It's erratic, of course. We saw Harvey being an exceptional rain event. Some estimates are that it's the sort of event that would only happen in a given location about once every 9,000 years. That's based on 41 inches in 3 days at a regular climate gauge in southeast Texas. But the same study estimated that the odds of that sort of thing have actually gone up by a factor of three since 1900. So we obviously can't say, hey, there's going to be a big flood next year. But scientifically, it's possible to say the risk of extreme rainfall has gone up historically in Texas. We know why it's going up, the basic factors involved, and one of those is that a warmer atmosphere can hold more water vapor in the air so that when it rains, you get that much more water coming down. We've seen that with events throughout the century in Texas, and unfortunately it's going to continue. That means that the risk of flooding expands. It means that places that were outside of 100-year floodplains in the past may not be in the future. There's a new estimate of risk of 100-year rainfall events that the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is going to be scheduled to come out with in December. And it's going to include a lot more years' worth of data. It's going to include the heavy rainfall that's occurred recently. And many places in Texas are going to find that their risk, at best estimate of risk, is higher than it used to be.
So does that mean that because of the warmer trends and the more moisture in the air and these storms are going to carry more water, that we're going to see more Harvey-like storms, that when they do hit Texas or Florida or the Gulf Coast anywhere, that there's going to be just these really big superstorms?
We are going to see more big storms. Now, given that Harvey was the sort of likely to see another Harvey anytime soon in southeast Texas.
I mean, I don't believe that. That it went every 10,000 years, and we had Rita, and we had Katrina, and these were massive storms.
Yeah, those are the likelihood of a major hurricane making landfall in Texas is fairly high. It happens about once a decade or so, and we're definitely going to see those. The weight of scientific evidence points toward seeing them with increased frequency, but they all have different impacts. Hurricane Ike, major impact was from storm surge. From Harvey, the major impact was from rainfall. And Harvey, frankly, was a storm that had never been seen in the history of the United States in terms of the magnitude of rainfall. So while we may not see something as bad as Harvey anytime soon, right, we are definitely going to see bad storms.
Okay, and John Nelson Gammon, Texas State climatologist. Let me go to Chief Patrick Cepeda for the closing comments. If you got something to add, you want to give another plug for Ready South Texas app downloads?
Oh yes, sir. It's all about being prepared before the storm, and
that's so free download app for iPhone, for Android.
Correct. So it's a Ready South Texas app. It's a free download. It's a great family planning tool. And to go to alertsa.com, it's another way. We recommend receiving alerts multiple ways, social media, through your weather, through your emergency notifications like ours. So go to alertsa.com, sign up for your alerts, get the app, start your family planning now. Don't start when the storm comes.
And keep your gas tank full.
And don't panic. Don't panic. We don't want to create something. But just plan ahead of time.
And Mark Hammond, I hope you have a calm and relaxed summer, and we don't have to bring you on the air for quite some time. I want to appreciate you coming in from the Insurance Council of Texas.
I hope that's the case, and I'd like to point out on our website, insurancecouncil.org, that if they'll go to PNC Resources and look for Hurricane Central, they'll see a documentary that we prepared on Hurricane Harvey, that was one, as well as one on Hurricane Ike.
Thank you so much. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.